From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The therapeutic and healing benefits of the arts have been touted dating back to the days of the ancient Greeks. But it's only been in the last 3 to 4 decades that formalized art therapy programs began to emerge in hospitals and other traditional healthcare settings. We'll explore this emerging field, the intersection of arts and medicine, ahead of an upcoming exhibition of works by local artists overcoming disabilities. Plus, in the mid-1990s, the endangered Florida panther population was believed to be between just 20 and 30 cats. Today, experts predict that number has risen to up to 180 cats. We'll explore the history of efforts to bring panthers back from the verge of extinction and opportunities and challenges facing future growth of the cat's population. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Amy Tardiff. Thanks for joining us. Florida Fish and Wildlife biologists announced in Fort Myers in June there's been an increase in the estimated population of the endangered Florida panther. We explore ongoing mitigation efforts that have helped bring the cats back from the verge of extinction, as well as future opportunities and challenges to a growing panther population. That conversation's coming up later this hour. But first, we explore the growing field of using the arts in medicine. Initiatives like the Arts in Medicine program at Lee Memorial Health System are becoming more prevalent as research shows the positive impacts of implementing the arts in hospitals and other traditional healthcare settings. It helps to reduce patient stress, saves time, financial resources, and promotes greater cognitive function. The Health System's Arts in Medicine program hosts an exhibition by local artists overcoming disabilities this month at the Sidney and Byrne Davis Arts Center in downtown Fort Myers. Joining me is the coordinator of Lee Memorial Health System's Arts and Medicine program, Doug McGregor. Longtime readers of the Fort Myers News Press will remember his political cartoons. He's also a children's book author and illustrator, and you can catch him playing harmonica in blues bands around Southwest Florida. Doug McGregor, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Amy.
Also with us is mental health counselor, artist, and FGCU alumnus Rose McGahey. She volunteers with Lee Memorial's Arts and Medicine program, and her work will be featured in the upcoming exhibition. Rose, thanks for joining us and for sharing your story with us.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Rose. And we're joined by Jill Sonkey. She's the director of the Center for Arts and Medicine at the University of Florida and the assistant director of UF Health Shands Arts and Medicine. She also serves as a faculty member in the School of Theater and Dance, the Center for African Studies, and the Center for Movement Disorders and Neurorestoration, as well as being an accomplished dancer and choreographer herself. Jill has more than 20 years' experience in the field of arts and medicine. Thank you so much for your time, Jill.
Thank you, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
And listeners can join the conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. Jill, let's start with you. When it comes to the concept of art or music therapy in healthcare settings, is there still a stigma to overcome in the mainstream medical community over the value or effectiveness of such treatments? Or is this a field that's been growing in acceptance?
That's a good question. And I'm going to give two answers to that, actually, because your question triggers a discussion that's common in the field, and that's the distinction between art therapy and arts and medicine. So the arts therapies are a distinct discipline from arts and medicine, and of course the arts therapies have been around since the 1930s in the United States. And in that discipline, trained mental health professionals use the arts to facilitate clinical goals. And that's different, very different from arts and medicine, the discipline in which professional artists are trained to work in the healthcare environment, understanding things like patient safety and how to navigate the healthcare environment, and help clinicians in the medical setting achieve their goals with the assistance of the arts. So they're very distinct disciplines. And in the field of arts and medicine, we're seeing tremendous growth in the past 30 years. We saw the first programs established in the United States at major health centers in the 1980s. And today there are programs in about half of hospitals in the United States. The Joint Commission, which is the accreditation organization for healthcare, has done surveys across the last decade that have demonstrated that the arts are growing significantly in prevalence, in particular in the areas of music and the visual arts, but in all of the arts disciplines.
Is it hard to get hospital administrators to see the benefits of art therapy treatments when they're giving out finances, money to allocate?
We are fortunate at UF Health, Shands Hospital. We've been here for almost 25 years, and we're a full department of the hospital. So our administration really understands the value of the arts in helping to humanize the healthcare environment and helping to enhance the quality of care that we provide. We're seeing that more and more, and we find that healthcare administrators, especially those who have experience themselves in the arts, can pretty easily understand the benefits and the value. And interestingly, in the economic downturn that started in 2008, we really didn't see a decrease in funding in arts and medicine. We saw more growth than had been seen previously in the field. So I think when things are tight economically, healthcare leaders understand that the arts are a pretty minimal investment with a very significant outcome in terms of improving the environment of care and helping patients and customers to see that a hospital system really cares about them.
So what has research shown are the benefits of, say, music therapy with pediatric patients when they have to go, like, undergo a diagnostic procedure?
Mm-hmm. So you touch on one of my favorite studies in the field. In 2005, Darcy Walworth from Florida State University published a great study that looked at music therapists working with kids who were preparing for CT scans. And she was looking at quality of care and cost of care. And that study found that when a music therapist helped prepare a child for a CT scan, that they were able to almost completely eliminate the need for sedation and anesthesia. They eliminated overnight stays. They put about 3 hours of nursing time back on the floor per procedure. And in fact, they saved $567 per procedure when extrapolated at that time in 2005, represented, you know, potential savings in the healthcare system nationally of about $2.5 billion per year if kids preparing for CT scans had music. So it's, again, a minimal investment with the potential to make a really big difference in cost savings in healthcare.
We have a Facebook question from Gina who asks if there's a specific kind of music that's been shown to be more effective in healing people or comforting their families than others, or is that basically someone's taste in music?
Yeah, you nailed it again. Yes, that is the research outcome. So there have been quite a few studies exploring different types of music as well as different types of art that are most appropriate in various healthcare settings and scenarios. And in fact, in both disciplines, the outcomes lean strongly toward preference. So in our programs, we utilize those ideas and work with patient preference. Some patients want rock and roll when they're dealing with a lot of stress. Some patients want classical music. It really is about personal taste.
And music has also been studied in the emergency room?
Yes, we're conducting a study now, actually the first such study in an emergency department. There's great evidence out there that music reduces stress and anxiety very significantly and that it can reduce pain as well and the need for pain medication. So we're taking that data and, again, learning from the 2005 Walworth study, we've placed four professional musicians in our emergency department here at UF Health. We've just completed phase one of the study, and we're analyzing the data now, looking at how live preferential music in an emergency and trauma care unit can improve patient satisfaction, can reduce the costs of care, and can improve operations in the department. We're also looking at the use of pain medication, so we're hoping to see a decrease in pain medication among patients who have live music.
Can these art therapy interventions, not only music but visual arts, remain in someone's memory long after the traumatic medical event itself? I read You sent information that for us to read alluding to how it can reduce anxiety, especially in children, to the point where it can help the next time the patient has to undergo a similar medical experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that positive association can be really helpful in long-term treatment.
That's amazing. I understand also some of your current research focuses on dance and Parkinson's disease and the impact arts programming has on surgical care and nursing retention.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so we've got a wonderful partnership with our Center for Movement Disorders and Neurorestoration here at UF and support from the Parkinson Research Foundation. And we're in our third year of looking at a broad array of measures to help us understand the impact of dance in people with Parkinson's disease. And we've got a study that's in the publication process now looking at the effect of an arts and medicine program on a medical surgical unit. We found a gap in the data about the impact of the arts on short-term stay patients. So we've just completed that study and are really excited about those outcomes coming forward.
We're exploring the intersection of arts and healthcare this afternoon with Jill Sonkey from the Center for Arts and Medicine at the University of Florida. We're also talking with coordinator of Lee Memorial Health System's Arts and Medicine Program, Doug McGregor, and local artist Rose McGahey. Have you experienced art therapy? Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And one more question for Jill. We'll move on to Doug and Rose. Jill, I read an editorial you authored on arts and medicine in which you describe a trend of dividing the research into two distinct camps. They are art therapies and arts and healthcare. You alluded to it earlier. Briefly tell us what's the difference so Doug can tell us what he does locally.
Great. So as I mentioned earlier, the arts therapies and arts and medicine are very distinct disciplines. The practitioners have very distinct training backgrounds. Arts therapists are mental health professionals who use the arts, and artists in residence, which is the common title for artists who work in healthcare, are professional artists who use the arts to improve the experience of healthcare for patients in many ways, providing distraction, enjoyment, opportunities for expression, all things that are therapeutic, but they're not therapy because they're not delivered by a licensed, certified, clinical professional. So that distinction is really important, and more programs today are including both. In ours, for instance, we have 18 professional artists on our staff and three arts therapists, and those professionals work beautifully together, call on one another, and the healthcare providers in our institution have become really good at knowing when to refer to an artist and when to refer to an art therapist. So we see these two disciplines working more and more in collaboration and providing really broad benefits to healthcare systems.
So Doug, based on that distinction, which one best describes the work at Lee Memorial Health System?
Oh, we're definitely the latter. In fact, we do call ourselves arts in healthcare. We haven't gone to the arts in medicine distinction yet, or maybe we will in the future. I know, Jill, you had mentioned that you had recently changed your name from that to arts in medicine. So there is a distinction between the two, but we still call ourselves arts in healthcare program.
Doug, how did you become involved in the arts in healthcare program in the first place?
I volunteered when I worked at the news press. It took some time out in the morning before I went and did my editorial cartoons to go to work at the hospital and work with the patients. And I'm a cartoonist, so I drew with the patients, particularly the younger children, and found it very rewarding. In fact, those days that I went into work that I had to draw my cartoon, I'd get to work around noon after being there for a couple hours at the hospital. I'd have to tell you, my cartoons were more powerful that day just because that experience of being in the hospital just grounded you, taking away some of the wonderful experiences you had with the kids and what you learned from that and put everything in perspective. So
it was therapeutic for you, too.
It was, very much so. So the volunteering turned into a full-time job later on when the newspaper business started to downsize and I was asked to take a walk out the door.
And you walked right in.
And I walked right into another door, as they say.
So what kind of services are provided at Lee Memorial? And for what types of patients? Is it primarily children?
No, we take care of all ages. We service four hospitals. We have about 55 volunteers total in various aspects of art. We have people that take an art cart around, and we provide that service to various floors in all four hospitals, but particularly at Health Park and Lee Memorial. We take care of the rehabilitation patients. We take care of oncology patients. We take care of any age. We don't discriminate for one reason or another. We just see one opportunity after another to go in and help and heal using various aspects of arts and crafts. We take music seriously. We take kids down to the music room, and we do have a music therapist, but we're also allowed to bring musicians in and share their skills, and they are, of course, trained, and they are taking safety courses to make sure that they bring the patients down properly. And we sing for the children. The children are also allowed to play musical instruments to help them, maybe about a half hour time in the music room.
Is it individualized based on a patient's needs or just what they ask for, what you think they want?
Oh, it's based on their needs for sure. We get a survey before we enter any of the hallways of the patients to be sure we know the severity of each patient and what they might need. We make sure that we work with the staff very closely and ask the nurses which children might be most appropriate for using our skills with our volunteers.
Well, you went as a volunteer, so obviously there's lots of volunteers, but how else is the program funded and supported?
With donations. We take donations all the time. My position is funded through the hospital system, but we're definitely take donations. We go to the dollar store a lot. We love the dollar store, and we get a lot of bang out of the buck from that particular store. We enjoy making things from, like, tissue flowers. We take a lot of
things. And he brought me two of them.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
They're a great icebreaker. When you go into a room and you put a smile on a lot of people's faces, we have volunteers that make them constantly. And we also have people outside of our volunteer program that volunteer independently to make them for us, too.
Now, when the patient gets this kind of therapy, does it need to be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance, or is that just part of the hospital stay?
It's just part of our hospital program, yeah.
Rose, back when you were a teenager, you were involved in a very serious car accident. What happened?
I was driving a car late at night and lost control of the car. It flipped, and I sustained a spinal cord injury in my neck, and it caused some paralysis of my body, my legs, my trunk, and some hands. I have some contractions in my hands, so my fingers don't necessarily, my dexterity is not all there.
Now, you're very independent. You work at FGCU, mental health counselor. But
yes.
Did you initially fear that you might not ever be able to gain the kind of independence you have now?
Oh, most definitely. And I took art lessons when I was in high school through a local artist where I lived, and always enjoyed drawing and painting and everything. And there was a big fear not only would I not be able to be independent in life and continue on and work and do all the things that people grow up to do, but I was also afraid of not being able to be creative and to express, be able to express my creativity again. And it took a while to get back there. I personally did not experience any kind of art in healthcare when I was injured. And thinking back now, I think how great it would have been had been given that opportunity. And that's one of the things that I'm enjoying about volunteering is being able to make somebody's hospital stay a little bit better. Because I know, especially for the younger kids in oncology that are in and out in the hospital quite a bit, how monotonous the hospital can be. So to be able to go in and spend some time maybe brightening their day or getting their mind off of all the tests and the poking and the prodding and the bad food and all of that stuff is quite rewarding.
How long were you in the hospital after the accident?
I was actually in the hospital for 9 months after my car accident.
Go ahead.
9 months. Two was spent in ICU, and then 7 months was spent in rehabilitation.
And how long did it take you to get back into painting again?
I guess initially I had a friend encourage me to take a drawing class when I returned to college. And I took that class and did quite well in it, but I didn't stick with it. It wasn't something that I was doing every day. And then on and off, I would do things just for myself, but not anything spectacular or anything. And then early on, when they were starting the arts and healthcare at Lee Memorial, it was Sonia Arledge and a lady by the name of Ann Harrison May, who was born without arms and painted with her toes. She was a toe artist. And I met her, and we bonded over art, and I actually, the fish that was chosen, my fish painting that was chosen for the Arts and Healthcare calendar this year, I actually painted at the memorial with Anne, and she was encouraging me. It was my first attempt at watercolor, and she kept encouraging me, and I'd dabble here and there, and it was just recently that I really started picking back up, taking some classes at the Alliance of the Arts, getting in touch with Doug to become a volunteer, and then going in with this starting to volunteer, painting the ceiling tiles, which in turn I felt so good after doing that at the hospital. Then when I would come home, and I would continue it through the week and try to paint more often and draw more often here at home. So
it's almost like you're getting the therapy now that you didn't get when you were in the hospital.
Yes.
But you're giving,
by other patients.
But you're giving it too. You're volunteering. Do you think that given your own history that patients are more apt to connect with you and what you've overcome?
Some of them. I do think some of them. I don't necessarily, I just casually will mention that I know being in the hospital can be boring sometimes because I spent a lot of time myself, and I think that kind of loosens some of the kids up. Obviously, the adults get it. I think the parents are kind of, they respect it, and they understand, or they're going at it from a different perspective than their child or that I did. But I think it's, we're not just providing, even though we're not just providing the art to the children. I mean, I've had parents draw with the kids, other siblings. I've actually had situations where maybe the child that was sick was not feeling well that day, but the sibling was going a little stir crazy. So we were able to provide some relief there, too. So it's really addressing the whole family unit.
Join our conversation with artist Rose McGahey, Lee Memorial Health System's Arts and Medicine Coordinator and cartoonist Doug McGregor, and Director of the University of Florida Center for Arts and Medicine, Jill Sonkey. Connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Jill, tell us a bit about the use of music and traditional healing rituals. I mean, it's not necessarily codified practices, but this idea of music and art facilitating healing is far from new, right?
That's true. Yeah, so one thing I've done in my career is studied a lot of the history of the use of the arts in healing traditions. It's just been an interest of mine, and I've found so much. I mean, there's really not a time or a point in history or a place that we can't find references to the arts being used for health and in healing traditions. I just got back last week from Uganda, where I was studying how the arts are used in public health in Uganda, which has been a formal practice since the 1930s. So the arts are used in so many different ways and in so many parts of the world. And for me, all that research has really helped me understand the theoretical foundations of our field, what it is on a really primary level that the arts have to do with our health and how they can impact our health. We don't try to replicate traditional healing rituals, of course, in hospitals. That wouldn't fit well today. But I do find that a lot of the basic principles of how creativity affects our health are really important in understanding and helping us understand how we practice today.
I was surprised to read that in the U.S., the organization of music therapy as a profession really began back in the 1930s.
Yeah, it did. In World War I, actually, out of necessity, the arts were called upon to assist with, you know, all of the patients that we had. Our healthcare system had never had so many patients, so many wounded warriors, of course, and so music was called upon on a very organic level. But in fact, historically, there's, you know, a lot of use and a lot of understanding previous. All of the sort of great philosophers, you know, throughout time, Confucius and Plato and Hippocrates, Averroes have written about the use of music in particular and the arts in health, and I've found a textbook from the early 1700s out of the UK that prescribes music in rehabilitation and healing practices in healthcare, formal healthcare.
Rose, might your career as a mental health counselor at FGCU allow you to know anything about the upcoming major in music therapy planned at the university?
I have not heard of that.
Oh.
I didn't hear that.
Doug, do you know?
Yeah, I understand there is going to be a new program's up and running very soon, if not already.
Yeah, that's all I know is that it's happening. It's going to happen.
Well, we're looking forward to it being so because we know we'll take some of the graduates and have them do some internships with our music program, volunteering and obviously being certified through our hospital.
We're looking forward to that, too, with the Bauer School of Music. Jill, in your writing, I did see that you acknowledged there could be negative effects if art therapy is not what you call patient-driven. What briefly could happen?
Well, so this will be in the article that should come out shortly based on our study in the medical surgical unit. And what we found is that music in particular, but the arts in general, add to the complexity of the clinical environment. And, of course, they add in many, many really positive ways. But we also learned that we have to really understand that we're one more element in a very hectic, you know, setting and system. And so we have to understand that complexity in regard to how we develop our practice protocols. What we learned from nurses on this med-surgical unit is that for a few who very politely, you know, encourage the use of music because they believe in it and they welcome it, but at certain moments in their practice when they're dealing with medications or calculations or critical issues, music can be a negative distractor and can really inhibit the care that they provide and can make them worry that they could cause medical errors. So it's not that music or art is bad, but it's just that we have to really understand when, where, and how it can be applied safely and beneficially. So that was an exciting level of understanding for us to find in this study. It affected our practice protocols significantly.
Rose, can you tell us about your featured artwork in the upcoming exhibition at the Sydney and Byrne Davis Art Center titled, the exhibition's titled Unlimited. What is your painting titled?
I went pretty patriotic with it being, I knew that this was opening was coming and got into the patriotic spirit. And all of my pieces that I'm showing are American representations of the American flag, different representations of the American flag.
Are they all watercolors?
No, they're actually acrylic on canvas. I didn't do any water. Or I don't know, Doug, did you put the heart in?
Yes, I got the heart in there for you.
Okay,
yes.
So there's one watercolor in there. But then there's two different American flag paintings.
Well, beautiful, by the way. We're going to have Rose set up at the opening for our artists and special families that will be there. She'll be signing the calendar. So it's a great honor for you to be there, Rose. We just love the fact that you won this year's calendar, and she'll be well represented with her artwork there.
And Doug, tell us just a bit more about what visitors can see other than Rose's portraits in the exhibit.
Well, we have about 115 pieces of art, and we started out thinking we wouldn't have enough art to fill this wonderful space that we were offered several months back. It's going to be at the Sidney and Burn Davis Art Center in downtown Fort Myers. And word of mouth, it's amazing how the community of disabled artists and what we called the title of the show actually shifted. Originally, we were going to call it Unlimited, the Artwork of Work for the Disabled. And we were corrected by a couple of parents who have kids worked through the autism spectrum, and they wanted to rename it. And I said, well, what would you call it? And they said, Unlimited, the work of from people with special abilities. And that is really what it is. It's an incredible show. We got people, youngsters from second grade all the way up into people from the 90s. So it opens up Friday, actually, for the general public, July 4th. And we're having a special showing for just VIP and special families tomorrow night.
And that's all the time we have. Thanks so much, Jill, Doug, and Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Jill Sonkey is the director of the Center for Arts and Medicine at the University of Florida. Doug McGregor is coordinator of Lee Memorial Health System's Arts and Medicine Program. Rose McGahey is an artist who volunteers with the program and whose work will be featured in the upcoming exhibition by Artists Overcoming Disabilities titled Unlimited, The Artistry of People with Special Abilities. It opens at the Sidney and Burn Davis Art Center in downtown Fort Myers this week and runs through July 25th. We're taking a short break, but when we return, the most recent data from state wildlife biologists predicts the population of the endangered Florida panther is increasing. We'll explore the history of mitigation efforts that have helped bring the cat back from the brink of extinction. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.